Hey everyone, it's Z Johnson with MR Explorer. Welcome to the first conversation in our D&I series that we are running. D&I meaning diversity and inclusion. Our first conversation is with Pepper Miller, who is an author. She has two books, one that's called What's Black About It and another called Black Still Matters. You can find links to both in our show notes. As well as just a diversity expert, she was a total joy to talk with. We had a very candid conversation with her, and I think you will find it extremely enlightening, really thought-provoking, just like everything else that we try to do here on MR Explorer. So with that, we'll leave you to it. Enjoy listening.
Hi, Pepper. It's really good to have you here. Thank you so much for just being here, lending your voice to us as we just start to explore a little bit more about the Black experience in the market research industry and in research itself. I would love for you to just take some time and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you, your background, specifically your experience within the market research industry. So I would love for you to have that chance.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure. And I appreciate you reaching out. I really, really do. It's very, very important. So I am Pepper Miller. Persephone is my birth name. Well, I got them both at the same time. That's another long story, Greek mythology. But I've been Pepper all my life. I am a market researcher, a thought leader and subject matter expert in the market research industry. And in the marketing industry, I work in multicultural marketing, focusing on the Black American market. I didn't initially go in to focus on the Black American market. I was working at an ad agency where I learned about market research. I didn't work in the market research arena. I worked really in the office management. It was a great job. I was researching cost-saving alternatives. Should we buy airplanes versus flying executives first class? So I'd go and go to these places, airline companies that sold planes. So I was this big client. I loved it. Working with interior designers and architects on expanding the office. It was 600 people. J. Walter Thompson was the ad agency. They were big back in the day before you guys were born. I mean, really, it was a long time ago. So I loved that job and I loved research, and I applied for the research department. I didn't get in and I was disappointed, and a girlfriend and I started researching companies. One of the Black executives, there was a very, very few of us there, 600 people, 60 Black people, and only 10 executives approached me and said, "Hey, I heard you guys had a research company. I got a project for you." And so that launched the research company. And as I knocked on doors for business, showing up in this brown skin, I was told, "We don't have any Black projects. We'll call you when we have something Black." And I was, "Are you talking to me?" I could only get work from the Burrells and the Soft Sheens, which was a huge Black owned hair care company. And I'm so grateful for them because they allowed me to practice my craft. In doing so, I was focused on qualitative research primarily, which I love having those conversations with people. And you're hearing their stories, my stories, and you're also hearing this disparity in terms of understanding them, the people in the room, the people who I live around and live with, and the client. That really motivated me to start talking to them, clients, more about the Black consumer market. And next thing I knew, I was speaking. I was asking to be a speaker at multicultural conferences where there was no one talking about Black people, mostly Hispanics and secondary Asians, and then no Black people. And then I wrote a couple of books and I started blogging for Ad Age, and just, you know, so the disparities and the challenges was really a motivator for me to get fully immersed in my culture and bring it to the marketing industry and the market research industry. And as they say,
the rest is history.
A good history, a very, very good history. I've done an awful, awful, awful lot, a lot of projects, a lot of, conversations. So this is good to share your story.
I love that. And it just sounds like, especially the way you smile and the way you say, you know, how much you've done and how much you've impacted so many of these companies, and hearing these other voices and considering the Black experience and everything that they were missing. You seem so happy.
Oh, that is so nice, because I am. It's, you know, it's been very challenging, Christina. It really has. The George Floyd, I know we're going to get into that, and Black Lives Matter movement has opened the eyes of many people in America. Time magazine calls it an overdue awakening. For 8 years during the Obama administration, there was a decline, less investment in Black research, Black advertising, Black media, Black marketing. So for 8 years, we were, you know, I was rolling even after 9/11, and then boom, because there was this perception we were post-racial. Then enter the Trump administration, and there was a bit of an aha moment, like there's a huge problem with race. But people like, man, we still have a problem with race. Phones started ringing again, but people went back to doing what they were doing. And now people are more involved and they want to understand more under the, particularly under this current administration. So, but it's been a challenge, you know, talking about who we are and why we do what we do, because people can be very dismissive. You're too sensitive. You're overly sensitive. Or because they don't see it, it doesn't mean it's just because it doesn't, you don't see it, it doesn't mean it is not happening. Or it's just because it didn't happen to you, it doesn't mean it's not happening. So it's been overcoming those challenges over and over and over and over again, and telling the story over again. I don't mind telling the story. When people like you are interested and when they ask questions, it makes me feel like the work that I'm doing is purposeful and that I'm reaching people. So you have no idea how pleased I am that you ladies invited me. I mean, I am sincerely, to be on your platform to share my story is a really big deal for me and for you.
I am. We've already said how happy we are for you to be here, but I think this is something that Z and I, when we discuss the direction or things that we want to do for this podcast, we've noticed such a hole in really what people are talking about that's going on even in within the market research industry, and then the kind of research that we're doing. I think there are so many assumptions going on within different types of organizations, whether you're client first or a supplier or whatever level of the industry you're working in. There are so many assumptions of, don't worry, I have that covered, or it's okay, like we can make these kind of assumptions about what a bunch of different kinds of minority groups are thinking or how they're acting. But we just noticed there was such a gap in talking about it and being open about it and learning about it. And so we're just so thankful that you're here. So it goes both ways.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So speaking on that and just how much work you've been doing, and you brought up George Floyd, which again, like you mentioned, we're going to get into a little bit deeper. But I do just want to do a quick check-in and just acknowledge, you know, how you are feeling, how you've been doing in the last, I want to say 6 months, but and a lot
almost
of people,
a year, right?
Right. And not even within this COVID environment, but I think it's really easy for people to assume that Black women or Black people have really been going through this tough time in the last 6 months since George Floyd. When in reality, this has been going on since the 60s.
Yeah. All of our lives.
Ages, eras.
I don't want to say like, how have you been doing in the last 6 months? But I do just want to do a check-in and just acknowledge like how you're feeling.
I am well. I am very grateful, happy, thankful. When the virus really was brought to full awareness, a lot of Black people had their heads stuck in the sand. And we hadn't heard the numbers and how it affected the Black community yet, early March, February. And so I didn't know anybody that had the virus or passed away from it. And now, I mean, I had a close friend that died from it. I have people that have been hospitalized and incubating, they would be covered and they're still recovering. I think I've had four friends, one close friend, and then maybe three, you know, associates who, where we were cool, we would see each other, they passed away. And then numbers of people that have been infected by the virus. Oh my God. So it you know, that's been crazy. I've been busy crazy with calls and podcasts and interviews, and I'm, you know, very grateful for it. Sometimes all of the work, all of the contacts don't turn into work. People call in because they don't know what they want. Mm-hmm. And I've been sending them back and asking them to give me a brief. But what it does, it makes them focus on their needs and what needs to be done short term, midterm, and long term. And then some come back. So that's been really good. Family and other friends are doing well, though. I'm divorced. I married the same guy twice, but really, we're really good friends, though. I went he texted me yesterday and said he made some chili, you know, so I have this little circle, you know, him and my bonus children. I never had children, so, you know, we're pretty close. So I went to his house last night. We shared a dog, so I went to see the dog, and we had chili and watched the Prince special that he had recorded. So family, everybody is well. Yeah. So I'm doing very grateful that I'm healthy.
Yes. I'm sorry for your loss. I'm happy that your family and that you are feeling healthy and, you know, staying busy, which I feel like.
Yeah. It's been crazy, but it's good.
Oh gosh, that's insane. I also just love that you go and visit your dog.
Yep. I gave him the dog when he got divorced. She wasn't listening to me anyway, Boston Terrier, but she comes and visits and stays with me 2-3 weeks at a time to give him a break. She's a sweetheart. Sammy, Boston Terrier. So cute. I kept looking at him. He's so cute. I kept looking at him. He was like, oh my God. Yeah.
That's what we do to our dogs. We just look at them and we're just like, I don't know how you exist. I don't know what created you, but you're just incredible. And they just look at us like, can you take us for a walk? Can you do something with us instead of just staring at us?
Let's go. Enough of this.
Oh, man. That was great. I think it's time to dig in a little bit, especially, you know, just some of your knowledge and what you do. So I would love to hear a little bit more about something that I read on your website, which is, quote, after my presentations, misconceptions of Black Americans being stereotypically insignificant and valueless are lifted, and otherwise guarded clients become less fearful and embrace the Black culture a little bit more. Can you tell us a little bit more about these stereotypes and misconceptions that you typically hear about the Black culture?
So one of the gifts that my ex-husband gave me, I was having to talk about, obviously, Black people. And I said, I have to mention slavery. What do I do? I have to. And people don't want to hear that. And he said, always, always just tell the truth. Yeah. And that has stayed with me for so long. One of the things that I always do in my workshops, even sometimes before we start a project, I have a wonderful Black Insights presentation, because I think it's important to level set people's understanding of who we are and where we came from and why we do what we do. Because there is a perception that Black people just showed up. We just showed up with all of our wonderment and all of our challenges. In this Black Insights presentation and in the two books that I wrote, What's Black About It and Black Steel Matters in Marketing, putting Black people in context is very, very important. In doing so, it's about helping people understand that we have a different history, a different beginning. And as a result of that, we have a different lens in terms of how we see ourselves and how we perceive how others see us. A different treatment. And as a result of the treatment, we have different beliefs and behavior. Those are the things that marketers, many of them miss, and in turn believe, adapt the stereotypes about us. Another thing that I do when we think about the stereotypes, one of the stereotypes is, there's so many, about the Black men, for example, they're in jail. They're deadbeat dads. They're, you know, it's these stereotypes. And that is a fraction of the Black community as it is in the white community, Asian and Hispanic. So I talk about the good Black men and the importance of showing good Black men, especially good Black fathers. Good fathers are heroes in every community, but they're superheroes in the Black community because we don't see those images enough. And so one of the things that I do is I would, for example, I may show in a commercial. I have a Walmart commercial. They're like maybe 2-3 years old now, but it's a general market spot with the Bee Gees music, which I love. Y'all don't know nothing about that. The Bee Gees music, Night Fever.
Bee Gees are great.
Night Fever. So I love that. And then they have this spot with this Black man with salt and pepper music. What a man, what a man, what a man, what a mighty good. And so the Black father is coming in with groceries and his son. They're cooking the food for their women and they're showing this food that is relevant to our culture. And what it does, it celebrates. We know men like that, that do those things, that are home, that are good fathers. Oh my God. So we show the contrast and we talk about the importance of that to help break the stereotypes. Black single Black moms, 73% of all Black births are to single moms. It is a devastating number. It is. But it does not mean that all single Black moms are bad moms. So with that number, they tend to throw us in the welfare queen bucket. Now, there are more white people that are on welfare than Black simply because there are more white people in the country. There is a disproportionate number of Black people. But even if you are on welfare, it doesn't mean that you're a bad mom. There's something that they equate that with. And so there's the celebration of moms and good moms that we talk to them about and show them numbers. Oh, we're educated and how being on welfare is not bad. There are some people that take advantage of the system, Black, white, and Asian. But when it comes to those that take advantage of the system, we get the racial labels. We get that in terms of Black on Black crime. So those are the things that people are asking me now. When you talk about pushback, what about Black on Black crime? What about that?
White
on white crime, Asian on Asian crime. 63% of, there's 63%, according to the Department of Justice, of Black people committing crimes against Black people. There's 57% of white people committing crimes against white people. When white people commit crimes against white people, it's called a crime. When we commit crimes against each other, it's called Black crime. So they bring them. So it's those kinds of things all the time, and how now those are being used to frighten people, these days. So those are some of the things that I try to help people understand.
Pepper, as you're talking about the stereotypes and the misunderstandings and the way that things are misidentified within the Black community among marketers, I'm very curious, do you find that also within the market research industry, not just marketing?
Absolutely. So in market research, one of the challenges is approaching this segment and lumping us in with mainstream because we speak English. And I even had a client to say in my presence, as she was pushing back on investing in Black research, they speak English, don't they, is a rhetorical question that marketers say and researchers say to continue having this mainstream presence in market research. And my response is, yes, we speak English. Are you talking to me? So when we are not, first of all, invited in the room, this is a market research industry, as I've said on other podcasts, is not diverse. It's very white. Yep. It is. And so the perspective in terms of developing research studies comes from one perspective. We're going to talk to these people. We're going to use these tools. We're going to ask these questions. And the questions are not always relevant to the audience. One of the things that I learned in market research, and particularly qualitative, when I was conducting focus groups, I started asking people about 17 years ago in the Black group, how many of you have been in a focus group? Hands go up. How many of you have been in all Black group? No hands go up. To this day, ladies, I did some virtual focus groups last week, and I'm still getting the nobody's been in all Black group. And I started asking the question because people were as they exited the group before COVID in a research facility, they asked me, what is this about? Why is it just Black people in here? I really wanted to talk about this and this and this, but I didn't know what was going on. So I didn't say that. And I was like, oh my God, so we're missing out. So one of the things that I do is invite Black people to be Black in the group. I tell them why we're here, and I tell them that the sponsoring client is interested, and I will say our opinion. That is usually a no-no. You don't say our, the moderator, but I say our when I'm talking to my people. So they know I am, we are, you know, connected. Yeah. And so in that sense, they then bring their culture with them. And that's what the market research does not do. They do not invite other people to bring their culture with them. And it's not in the in the studies and the tool. And then they're recruited mostly in focus groups by a white person. They're greeted at the facility by a white person. They've been in focus groups before, and they undoubtedly know there might be people behind the glass. So these Black respondents may have a tendency to be politically correct. And so that's one of the things that you have to do is invite them to not do that. But when you don't have people in the room and at the table and help designing the study, you get that. It's the same with quantitative studies. I think we have to do the same thing with quantitative. You got to let people know this is a Black study. And as the spirit moves you or how comfortable you are, I want you to respond through your Black lens. It's not about leading, as many people feel. It's about extending an invitation, because we talk about Blackness, race, racism, all the time, every day, all the time. Not because of George Floyd, it's because of how we live and our experiences. And so you have to bring that, to the table. And that's not happening in research today. And that's a really, really, really big opportunity for them to do that, not only with the Black culture, but with Asians and Hispanics as well. It's easier to do that with Asian and Hispanics, because again, they speak a different language. Language has become the cultural identifier for many brands. And again, because we speak English, we are rolled in with mainstream and treated as the mainstream audience in doing research. And that's a big missed opportunity to close the gaps and expand your target.
So can I ask a follow-up?
Sure.
Let's say a CPG or a tech company is designing a set of either qualitative work or quantitative work. I guess what is typical right now is they would just say, here's the audience we're looking for. Let's get, like you say, all English speaking, we'll call it a day, and get everybody in the same room. Would you suggest then that they...
My God, no.
So tell us, because that's how research
is how it's done.
Especially quantitative work is, let's just program the survey, send it out. We'll have our
America is very diverse, but America is very segregated. I mean, who are your friends and my friends and where we live? I live in a Black community. And I'm not saying that we're all like that. I mean, I too have white friends. I have white friends, but most of my closest friends are Black. I mean, see, why not bring that attitude to the research process? So the other thing is, when you have, and it depends on the subject matter, but people believe, well, Black people are 13% of the population, so I'm going to have two Black people in the focus group and two Hispanic. And so when something comes up that is not relevant to our culture, do the two Black people in the focus group room, can they feel comfortable speaking on it? When you have a focus group discussion, it is all about, first and foremost, I mean, yes, you want to have the right butts in those seats, but it's about making sure you have the right comfort level so that people are willing to share from their perspective, from their lens. And when you have this rainbow coalition, if you will, in the focus group room that is not America's reality necessarily in general, it's awkward. It's awkward. Yeah. So people tell the truth as much as they can, but they're not telling the whole truth and they're not allowed to bring the whole selves to the table. And there's huge, huge missed opportunities. And so what marketers do is they develop research studies that are comfortable for them and not comfortable for the respondent. And that's a huge mistake. That's a huge mistake.
Yes, thank you. Like all of that. And I think especially what hits is when you say, when I hear you say that, my mind immediately went to, and I've seen moderators and like specifically ask people who haven't spoken up yet in their focus group. And they say, well, what do you think about that? And now the way that I, after hearing you say that, I can't imagine being that Black person that has now just been asked like, and what do you think? When I don't feel comfortable in the room. And now that even makes me think like, whatever they say next, I hope is true. But now I just think like, what if they're just saying something to make them, right, to make themselves feel like they're fitting in with the rest of the group. And now my research is shot.
Correct.
So like, yeah, you know, it's like, it's more beneficial for literally everybody involved. The moderator. Respond to your end research, your stakeholders, the marketing campaign, your consumers, like just take the time and make the investment.
That's a wonderful point, Christina. I hate it when even now the industry started dismantling multicultural centers of excellence and multicultural marketing and going for this total market again. You know, we're supposed to be looking at these insights that what particular segment is driving, you know, the business and use those driving insights to reach everybody. But that didn't happen. So people are still on the same page in terms of research. It's amazing how people want to pull everybody together and then we don't even live like that.
Yeah.
Think from that perspective, just like, I wonder how a Black person feels about this, or I wonder how an Asian or Hispanic, those people that are not in the room. So the multicultural segments, and particularly Black people, have we just been invisible in terms of research. And it's been just following the general market, you know, standards and procedures, and those things need to be revisited like crazy.
Agree. You know, as I listen to you, Pepper, I'm thinking about the design approach to all of our projects, right? And the idea of who is in the room while you're designing those projects. But even then, I'm thinking how uncomfortable it would be to be the only Black person in a large room designing a study. And now suddenly that person is supposed to represent the entire Black culture. Right. Right. And it's like, that also is not answering the issue. Just because they're sitting in the room doesn't mean you've made it comfortable for them to share their actual opinion and to share their true voice about what's going on, right? If anything, you've just made the situation 100 times worse because like your heart's in the right place, execution, not so great.
Well, that's a good point, because to be in the room, even if you're the first, it's a start. It's better than nothing. Yeah. It's our life. We are accustomed to that. We talk about the mask and the mask of duality. We put the mask on for white people, not just to do for the sake of language and Ebonics, and not to talk about Ebonics, but it is to make whites feel comfortable with us. Right. So this is our world. This is what we do. Many of us are comfortable going in and out of those worlds. And so it does depend on who the invitation came from too, because people who are sincere like you ladies, I am quite comfortable with you because you have asked me to be myself, to be authentic in so many words. And so when that invitation comes from the person, even if you're the only Black people person in the room, there is a particular comfort level for you to do that and to bring your culture to the table. So we're accustomed to that in terms of, playing these dual roles. And the second thing, it depends again on the invitation and how sincere and authentic that invitation is. So it's a start, at least and I'm always grateful for the start. President Obama's election as the first Black president did not make us post-racial. We will be post-racial when it's the 10th Black president, the 10th woman, the 10th LGBT person, for God's sake, a trans president. Boy, wouldn't that be great? I mean, think about that, or Asian and Hispanic. It's a start, but it is not the end. It's the beginning. Yeah. So that's a good question.
How do we take that start and how do we build on it? Like, what's the next step? So let's say we are making the more conscious decision of who is in the room. We're being better about being open and being honest and saying, we are inviting you in the room and we want you to please come be yourself. Be yourself in this room. We need your voice. How do we build on that? Like, what's the next step from there?
I think even the first step, because bless your heart, everybody's not like you. it takes time to even get there. See, it does. It takes time to get there. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of your last question. What needs to be done is to kind of look around the room and see. And I think that's what happened with the Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd protests. People looked around the room and discovered we are not there. They walked around the office and said, God, there's no Black people. Oh my God, there's no Black people here. So it's about investing in talent and hiring people. And then it's about educating yourselves. I think that's one of the things we have to do before you, to have some kind of empathy, if you will. I think there needs to be some kind of education. There's tons of things out there to read about Black people. There's tons of things on PBS to watch, movies, Netflix. There's tons of things to read, to educate yourself. And then to start being a good listener and having courageous conversations. You are being great listeners today, ladies, and we are having a courageous conversation, you in particular, because I'm but for you to listen to my story. And those are the things that have to happen over and over and over again. Hiring talent, educating yourselves, not just depending on a Pepper Miller or other experts to tell you what's going on and what's happening and how they feel, but to educate yourself on that, and then to have courageous conversations with your group, among your group, and then with other people. It can be painful, and because some people are very angry, and to try to listen to that, that will then prepare you to be more authentic, to extend the olive branch, if you will, and extend an invitation for people. I don't think one should extend the invitation if they're not feeling it, if they're not understanding, if they don't have some type of empathy. One or more of those, I think you should wait until you get there. But empathy is huge, because it is a deficit of empathy in the market research industry, in the marketing industry. It's not there at the top. And I think that's what was glaring through the Black Lives Matter and George Floyd protests. It was the people at the bottom, at the grassroots level, with the empathy that is spread nationwide and then globally. Empathy is it's the new buzzword today in our industry, and it's very important, but it's lacking at the top.
Yeah. When you are saying, we need to build empathy and have these courageous conversations, are there suggestions that you would have for white people to help offer that comfortability or extend that empathy to their Black coworkers that quite honestly likely have not felt comfortable having these conversations in the office or with their coworkers before? How can we make them feel comfortable that we are not those people, and hopefully no one, like, we are not those people to have any kind of retaliation or to take something personally, but really to lay that groundwork of, if we want to be having these courageous conversations and we are willing to hear the hard things, I would love to dig in a little and double click in, you know, that market research term. I'd love to double click into like any, how can I do that? I would love to.
I think that's a good question, a fair question. I do think you have to identify someone who is approachable because it is sensitive. There are some people that are very angry and it's just not going to work. And trying to have a courageous conversation with someone is angry, is not going to work. And they're entitled to be angry. But if you are approaching them with sincerity and they're just going to be rigid and too angry, then they are not going to be good listeners. It's got to be good listeners. It has to be good listeners on both sides. The Black person has to be a listener, especially if you're approaching, a good listener, and so does the non-Black person. So I think identifying someone that is approachable, that you can have the courageous conversations with, and then expand it maybe to a larger group. And I do think, inviting someone, someone like me or that approachable person who is open to chatting with you in smaller groups until it can grow, until you then become the person that can go out and tell people and so on and so on, as that commercial said years ago. But I think, you know, start small. Start with an approachable person, because the approachable person, you can ask your questions, because you need to feel comfortable. And as we say in focus groups, there are no wrong answers or questions. But if you don't know, you don't know. And the fact that you say, I don't know and I want to know, I think that's a door opener. I think that's an olive branch. Every Black person may not feel that way, and that's okay. But you're looking for the approachable person to start your journey with. And that's important for you so that you don't shut down. Because we want you ladies, Christine and Z, I want you to continue your journey of learning and educating and having conversations. So you identify that person by listening to how they come off. You know how we identify approachable people, whatever that energy is within you. It's the same kind of energy. And you let that guide you to identify the person, and then you go from there. And you can ask your questions, and you have to be vulnerable and guarded at the same time.
Yeah.
So just keep going. Just keep going. And it's not going to happen overnight.
That's great. Thank you so much.
No worries.
So I think stepping back, I guess. So this is in the room. This is with your coworkers, how I was asking. So if we step back, as you have done your work and expanded your work, how do you typically encourage and help researchers and marketers think more about the Black experience and Black culture? Like, do you ever find that? I'm sure you do. So, okay. Tell us about, like, if you find any pushback or defensiveness when you're encouraging this expanded thought.
Yes. Again, it's some of the examples I gave before, that they speak English, that's a defensive measure. People then start, again, bringing up things like, you know, Black on Black crime, you know, those kinds of things. People are people. It's the, what do they call those? The microaggressions. You know, people are people. We're all the same. We're all from the human race. So we don't need to X, Y, Z, you know, so it's a little polite, as they believe, pushbacks, but they're really kind of soft microaggressions in a way. You are so articulate, you're articulate, so we don't need to, you know, compare to what, you know, the other black, you know, you have to be careful about using people as props. Pepper Miller is our black blah, blah, blah. She's articulate versus the black people that are, and those are my people. We are all the same kind of thing, wanting to connect with me and not them. I do get pushed back and I am like boiling inside sometimes. And I think I get frustrated with those who are arrogant about it, arrogant and ignorant. And sometimes their clients can't say anything, you know, but sometimes I just decide not to work with certain people. I just say, I'm just not the one. I'm not a good fit. And others, I realized that America, a lot of Americans just honestly don't know. If we were taught the real history, we would be further along in terms of being more of a cohesive, compatible, a very diverse culture if we were taught history. But that was by design that didn't happen. So now it's all, the history is coming later in 2020 versus in every group. So yes, I get pushback and I respond with some examples. And a lot of the examples that I give, some people don't like. Some of the pushback is like what happened recently. Why are black people destroying their communities? Why are they, you know? And I would tell them, I am not for lawlessness. I think people that break the law should be punished. But there's this, all of it still is systemic racism, and people don't want to hear that, you know. Yeah. But it is, when you don't provide opportunities for people. Desmond Tutu said that, Bishop Desmond Tutu, when you don't provide opportunities and jobs and things for people, this is how they act out. And in our community, a lot of the businesses are, there are some Black-owned businesses, but many white-owned businesses. And so that's a knee-jerk reaction to capitalism. It's not an excuse, it's a reality. And some people necessarily don't want to hear that. But those are some of the stories that come with, you know, the pushback. It's not only pushback in terms of a design. People start reaching back to, how come black people do this? How come you people do this? So it gets into that, those kinds of discussions too. It could be very painful. It could get ugly, but I have to remain composed and realize that, there's groups and groups and hundreds of thousands of people that just don't know. They just don't know. And it's the ignorance of just not knowing and being taught something different. So
do you ever have a client that, you know, you offer this, here's what you should do, or here's what I'm recommending you do. And they say, not into the 100%, but I'll do this like 20%. Or they just say, no, thank you. But they kind of have it in the back of their head and they might do it a couple years later. Do they ever come back to you and say, you were right, we should have done the entire 100%. We didn't know. And the insights that we're getting out of this are so rich. Like, you were right, we were wrong. Like, do you... I do
have clients that have that question. Sometimes it doesn't happen with me. Usually what happens is I'll do my Black Insights presentation and they'll go off and do something that I don't recommend. And then they'll call me and say, we did this study and we have no insights here. None. So now we want to work with you and do a Black study, for example. So I'm getting more calls now in the era of Black Lives Matter and George Floyd for more Black studies, because that's one of the things, ladies, that's not been happening, particularly from, to your point, the quantitative phase. Definitely qualitative too, but just no Black research studies at all. Again, they mix people in. So now they want to understand and they want to ask those questions. I remember when I started doing market research too, I would have questions about our culture and the Black experience, or the conversation would go that way in the focus group room and the client would cut it off. We're not talking about that. And I've got it under control. People aren't complaining or arguing or anything, but they're sharing the Black experience. And many clients didn't want to hear that. And we were not allowed to have those conversations. Now we can, you know, now clients want to hear it. I can put those questions in the guide. And it's very important. And I think that's one of your questions, too, about why it's important. For example, I did a study for a big chain of beauty stores, and they had never, ever done any research with Black women. And so they wanted to hear the Black experience around beauty and how Black women define beauty for themselves. So it was a conversation about colorism, darker skinned women not being represented in the media, how just all the negative perceptions about Black women and Black beauty have come up. And these women were able to talk about it, which was really good. I think I did a study for a bank. People think banking is banking, but Black people have been locked out of having access, the same level of access. And so just recently I was doing a study for a bank with high affluent Black people and how none of them were inherited money, that they built money from their jobs for their 401ks and side hustles and, you know, saving, being very, very disciplined, and the importance of educating other Black people. They kept talking about each one teach one, how it was their responsibility to reach back and help another Black person. So those kinds of insights need to be incorporated into even the research study. So what are we going to talk about in the quantitative study? That, the importance of, you know, reaching back, how people define beauty, how they define wealth, how they, you know, those questions that were typically not on the table to be included in a quantitative study, now they are. So we can finally talk about culture and differences and impact of culture and different experiences in the research process. And as a result, you will have a wonderful, a very rich study. One more thing. One of the things that I started doing before COVID, because we were doing these focus groups and then people, you know, I was like, well, what I started doing was bringing in a camera crew in the focus group facility. And then we would identify the most articulate respondent. And then we would take that respondent and go into her home. And everything had to be based on the objectives. Maybe we go into her homes and invite two of her friends to come in, and they had to qualify. And we have a conversation about beauty or whatever, or health. And then we may go shopping with them and see what they're putting in their carts and come back and look in their, you know, look in their cabinets. And then we take all those clips and narrow it down to a 5-minute sizzle reel, which is like this Black experience with your brand or in the category. And you have something really rich then now. In addition to the final report, you have something that you can share with your teams or share with your clients, or if you're a distributor, you know, right, look at what we learned about the, you know, the Black consumer. Let me show you the sizzle reel, for example, and why you need to have these products in your store, for example. So we have richer research and more opportunities when you try to think of things differently to engage people differently in a different way. And that comes with inviting different people in with different perspectives.
Pepper, if you had one wish for the industry.
That's not on your list.
I know. Yeah, sorry.
I'm so excited.
If you had one wish for the industry right now, what would that wish be?
I guess to be really diverse, to have a really diverse industry. And what comes with that? Because it's not, and when I say really having a really diverse industry, the really part is as important as the diverse, because with really, it means empathy. It means courage, having courageous conversation. It means all the steps that you've done to get there to make this diverse, and that it is authentically diverse. And maybe that's even a better word, an authentically diverse industry. I would wish that, because empathy and education and courageous conversations have to come with that. And that provides a wonderful opportunity for innovation, learning for all of us to learn and grow in the industry and grow with ourselves. So that would be the one wish that I would like.
I love that wish.
I do too.
I think there's just so much in that wish. Like you said, like everything that builds up to it. Yeah. I think that so many industries, I think marketing and market research are interesting industries, because you can think about how, you know, some stores might say, oh, we need to hire diverse sales representatives or whatever that is. And okay, fine, check that box.
Seen
in the marketing and market research industries specifically, because once you get a more diverse employee set into leadership, it extends into leadership.
That's right.
Then you're also doing more diverse research. Like it's what's happening inside the building, and then what is also happening outside.
I love that. And that's why authentic diversity is important, because diversity, to your point, Christina, has been checking the box. But authentic diversity is more expansive. It's wide and it's deep. And so I love that.
I think trying to get there leads into, because I know we have to wrap soon. So I think getting to that, taking a big step backwards, hopefully not that big of a step, but I don't think we're quite there to say.
Right.
Yeah.
So wrapping up, I think, what are some of maybe your top three things that we can keep in mind? Anyone who is listening to this, you know, we have listeners that are client side, we have listeners that are supplier side, we have like on the tech supplier side, like who's creating the technology, we have those who like panel providers, you know, suppliers, people who are moderating, and we have clients and our stakeholders. So, you know, we have, that's a lot of different kinds of people. We don't have a lot of people, but we have a different kinds of people.
That's right.
So what are some of the top three things that we should be keeping in mind to just continue to improving the industry? Hopefully we're on
an improvement track. let's hope we're on that trajectory.
Okay, I think we're going like this. So what are some of those top three things?
And I mentioned this before, and I think it's still the same three things. It's about expanding and hiring, the talent. You gotta have talent to invite people to the table. And I think that's important. And then you have to, again, it's about educating yourself and reading, and it could be tough, and watching some things on Netflix. And there's tons of things out there. You could, buy my books, What's Black About It and Black Still Matters in Marketing. I have one more book coming out next year, The Fundamentals of Us. And so educating yourself is absolutely huge, absolutely huge. And then the third thing is, again, is having courageous conversations. Those are the three things I think that every industry should consider: hiring talent, educating yourselves, and having courageous conversations. You may have to flip those. It might be in the wrong order. It might be educating yourself, having courageous conversations, and then hiring talent.
For us to do the authentic diverse, right? Authentic diversity, and do that hiring in the right frame of mind and frame of reference, it's got to go. I think you're going to have to do that education, courageous conversations, and then we're building the empathy to go do the hiring.
I like that. I like that. And I agree. I think it should be, you know, in that order. So the points are there, but the hierarchy needs to change from what I said earlier. So I like that.
Time. It can all happen at the same time, right? Like, we're not done. No one is ever done learning or reading or listening or growing that empathy and having those conversations. But if you're just hiring to check a box, what are the chances that those that you're hiring are going to stay? Once they show up that, and you know, after their first day, they realize I'm just here to check a box. Yep. Like no one is listening to me. Like, this is nothing. I don't feel comfortable here. Like, there has to be, even as they're hired. And I think this with everybody, no matter their race or gender or, you know, wherever, you need to be having these open and courageous conversations.
Yeah, I agree. It's not a list. It's a circle. And you're absolutely right that those things too all need to be happening together and be in alignment with each other. Yes. So this is the best. I love this conversation. I'm like, I'd like to go to lunch with y'all. I did. I have some wine with y'all. I mean, I would.
When we're allowed to be on planes again, I am down.
Yeah, totally.
Come and let's just hang out, girls. I would love it. It's been really great.
Thank you so much for coming and, well, for, you know, dialing in. And like, this was an incredible conversation. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait
to have like 10 more with you. I want to have 10 more conversations like this.
Anytime, because this is, you know, it's a process. It's not just this one shot Black Lives Matter. We're going to be seeing some ups and downs and high lows. And even me, it's like I'm learning too of what to do, how to present myself in the audience. I'm always updating my insights presentation. I used to be very radical when I, you know, early on, and maybe too, I was a little angry. So I was like Malcolm X, and Malcolm X, I love him. He's relevant. And so then I became more of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, kind of I'm still learning too, but believe it or not, I'm learning too more things about my own people and about myself. So it's a process for me too. I'm not just sitting up here on the throne waiting for people to come to me. It's not like that. I'm evolving as well. So you ladies are very special. I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting Christina and a guy, Z. So this is too cute. This is great. So,
thank you. And
we will see each other again, ladies, on Zoom, in person.
In person.
All right, everyone, we're going to link all of Pepper's resources to the show notes. And again, thank you so much for being here. Z and I are so grateful for you. We'll talk very, very soon.
We will. It's my pleasure. Good job, ladies. Great questions, thoughtful discussions, very comfortable. You guys are great interviewers. I loved this.
Thank you.
You guys are great. This was like the best. Really. So
thank you so much.
I'm doing a podcast too with my millennial partner called Mind Your Melanin. And anyway, I'm going to reach out to you guys to be on my podcast when we get our act together. I love the comfortable conversations that we had here. And I want you to bring your perspective. I bring my Black perspective. I want you to bring your white perspective. I want the same thing to happen. And I don't want you to feel it's nothing uncomfortable. It's not putting you on the spot or anything. It's just us talking about stuff and things that you've seen. So I would love for you to be on our podcast.
We are so there, Pepper. So there.
Thank you. Thank you very much.